Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Andrew Ross, who's Professor of Social and Cultural Analysis at New York University. He's also the author of Bird on Fire, Lessons from the World's Least Sustainable City. And he is one of the organizers of the Occupy Student Debt Campaign. Welcome to Background Briefing, Andrew Ross.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
And this year, student debt is approaching $1 trillion. And in this context, the White House apparently has just buckled under pressure from well-connected lobbyists representing the for-profit colleges. There's a very good article in Saturday's New York Times on the front page about this. What the article tells us, Andrew, is that this $30 billion predatory industry has been able to resist reform that the Obama administration promised. They more often than not provide students with a worthless education while saddling them with the mountains of debt. And many of these students are very poor and veterans. And this is an industry that has incredible friends on Capitol Hill that's allowed to make enormous profits as a private enterprise that's 90% funded by the taxpayer. I mean, isn't this a monstrous scandal?
Well, it's immoral to say the least, and there will be a lot of champagne glasses being raised in toast whenever that volume of student debt reaches the $1 trillion mark, which it will do soon. Just as last year, the same glasses were being raised, not just in Wall Street, but also in certain sectors of government, when cumulative student debt surpassed consumer credit debt for the first time. These are some of the most lucrative loans you can make in the whole finance industry, and government, our federal government, I'm sad to say, has been an enabler, to say the least, of this predatory lending system that now basically supports the entire landscape of higher education. I mean, that's the most immoral part of it, that our educational institutions are totally dependent now on debt bondage, or what I think of as debt bondage.
But it's debt bondage for the student is scammed. They don't get the education as promised, and they don't get the jobs as promised afterwards, and instead they're servicing a huge debt for the rest of their lives. And the people that are making this happen, that leaned on the White House, who tried to do the right thing, you know, Anita Dunn, a close friend of the president's, of course, you know, Kaplan, which is one of the biggest for-profit operations, that's run by the Washington Post Company. Maybe that explains, they don't want to offend the Washington Post. Apparently, Sperling, the head of Phoenix, University of Phoenix, he's a close friend of Nancy Pelosi's. You got Richard Gephardt leading the lobbying effort, along with John Bro, a former Louisiana senator, and Tony Podesta, whose brother John ran Obama's transition team. And so it goes. This is about how Washington operates, isn't it? You have the revolving door of people who trade in their public service for private gain. They then get the Congress to give money directly to these operations that then give them huge checks to essentially scam students. And how can they call it a private enterprise if 90% of it is federally funded?
Well, I agree with a lot of that analysis. It is a very well-connected racket, if you like to put it that way, and certainly that is the way it's being exposed these days. If we're talking about a regular consumer sector, you know, in an advanced capitalist society, you would expect to see this kind of racket operating. It's pretty normative in most consumer sectors, especially in the military sector. But because it's in the realm of education, I think people, especially educators and arguably parents, many of whom have to foot this bill, are co-signers of the loans, and students increasingly themselves, they see this as particularly immoral because education is this particular kind of good. Most people see it as a public good, and even those who see it as a private good would probably acknowledge that there are some private goods that ought not to be treated as market commodities. And so the issue really, and this is one of the issues our campaign speaks to, is whether paying for an education is the same as paying for a flat-screen TV, whether loans should be treated as regular consumer loans, or whether we really need to set aside a different kind of category for lending, interest-free loans at the very least, for the university sector.
Particularly when you hear all these politicians, every time they run, they always say we've got to improve education. You know, George W. Bush was our education president. Obama was going to be our education president. Again, I'm speaking with Andrew Ross, professor of social and cultural analysis at New York University. He's the author of Bird on Fire, Lessons from the World's Least Sustainable City. That's Phoenix, Arizona. And he's one of the organizers of the Occupy Student Debt Campaign. Tell us about the Occupy Student Debt Campaign, because when I went down to Occupy LA and spoke with a lot of the people down there, a lot of them were students who first thing they were talking about was the mountains of student debt they have.
It's been a constant refrain at all Occupy locations, and we're not just talking about youngish people. Most student debtors are in their 30s or 40s. Many of them have gray hair at this point. We're talking about not just the most indebted generation in history, as it's often called these days, but at least a couple of generations. So we've been hearing this refrain constantly, and our working group at Occupy Wall Street decided to launch an action initiative in the form of a national campaign that would basically allow debtors to refuse debt, to sign on to a pledge of refusal to withhold their loan payments after a million others have signed up. So instead of suffering the agony and humiliation of debt and default in personal isolation, which is what's happening in mass numbers, we're offering an alternative for debtors to engage in a sort of collective act of dissent, a debt strike threat, if you like, and which we're hoping will have a public and political impact.
So do you think that the Occupy movement is being carried on campuses through this issue? That must be pretty, a lot of people always say, well, you know, the activism of the 60s is never going to return because it was driven in part by the fact that we had the draft back in the Vietnam days, and people had a very personal stake in not being killed in a stupid war. Is there a sense of a personal stake in this issue?
Well, it's interesting you should mention that example, because at a CUNY, the Baruch College CUNY protest last week, a student publicly burned his debt collection letter from Sallie Mae, and I thought to myself, well, is this going to be the equivalent for this student generation of draft card burning for the anti-war movement in the 1960s. Certainly the sentiments and the momentum are there on college campuses. I think we're only going to see this escalate. I hope we will, because it is an intolerable and unsustainable situation. I should mention our campaign is not just a pledge of refusal, it's also tied to several principles, one of which is that the federal government should cover the tuition costs of all 2- and 4-year colleges in the country. According to our estimate, it would cost a little more than $70 billion, which is actually a tiny slice of the federal budget, and would allow the U.S. to join the list of countries around the world, all of them less affluent than ours, which do provide free college education. We also are asking for interest-free loans, and in addition, for private universities to open their books. There's no justifiable reason in our eyes why private universities that are vast beneficiaries of federal largesse in all sorts of ways should be allowed to shield from public scrutiny their fiscal affairs. That's another important principle, we think.
Well, these for-profit colleges are enjoying sky-high profit margins, but I'm wondering, though, when you hear, particularly now in this presidential campaign, which is dominated by the Republican candidates, because they're the only ones running effectively against an incumbent, so much of the refrain is about getting government off our backs, smaller government, how the virtues of the free market, that's what Mitt Romney keeps telling us. But this is an absolute disgrace here, what's going on with these for-profit colleges. This is federal money. They're 90% funded by the taxpayer. And the taxpayer would get so much better deal if they just gave this money out to these kids at low interest rates. And so that the kids wouldn't be stuck with this mountain of debt that weighs them down, particularly if they can't find a job because the diploma they got from these for-profit colleges is useless and they didn't get an education at any rate. I mean, I don't see – to me, this is so ideologically hypocritical. It's just, it makes me crazy.
The situation is definitely most acute and intolerable in the for-profit sector. In addition, these universities have the highest rates of non-completion of degree. And so we're seeing a whole generation of students carrying their debts off without even a degree to show for it. And these are debts that are pretty much unpayable. I mean, that's the bottom line here. We're in a fiscal situation where these debts are unpayable in people's lifetimes. And so we either have to wipe the slate clean, which is also what we're asking for, debt abolition on a massive scale. It happens every day with the banks, vast amounts of debt being written off. But when it comes to individual student debtors, they're not even allowed to declare bankruptcy, which is the most basic form of consumer protection. So you can find our campaign at OccupyStudentDebtCampaign.org, and it's are fully laid out there, a lot of the principles. And that last principle about debt abolition is in, I think you'll find it appeals to an idea that's very commonly circulated throughout the Occupy movement of a debt jubilee. Which happens periodically in civilizations throughout history, whereby a ruling class perceives that the debts of the common people are simply unpayable and decides to wipe them off the books.
Well, but this one, you'd think, though, that maybe there's a movement, that should be a movement afoot to shame these shameless Congress people who take money from these for-profit lobbyists. Then they open up the treasury to them, and they put their fists in. They take federal dollars out, your dollars, our dollars, and then they get them for next to nothing. And then they charge these students these mafia vigorish loans. I'm just wondering about shame, whether all these lobbyists are all connected to the Democratic Party. They ought to be shamed, shouldn't they?
They should be shamed. I think they will be if initiatives like ours go forward. The first step, however, is to, as we see it, is to allow people, especially debtors, to empower themselves in some way rather than relying upon their demands to be addressed by corrupt lawmakers, which is a strategy that Occupy has rejected up until this point, and we are in agreement with that. Rather than that, give debtors, give the least powerful people and the most vulnerable people some kind of mechanism for empowering themselves through action.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Andrew Ross.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Again, I've been speaking with Andrew Ross. He's Professor of Social and Cultural Analysis at New York University. He's the author of Bird on Fire, Lessons from the World's Least Sustainable City, and he's one of the organizers of the Occupy Student Debt Campaign. So what do we learn on Background Briefing today? Well, we started out with Colonel Wilkerson, who was Secretary of State Colin Powell's chief of staff. He blew the whistle on the cabal, the Cheney-Rumsfeld cabal responsible for torture. And, of course, we're back again with the Defense Authorization Act that's going to make Guantanamo even more important as opposed to closing it down. He analyzed the terrible aspects of this act in terms of its abuse of civil liberties, the crossing of the line with posse comitatus and having the military on our streets arresting people and citizens and detaining them indefinitely. He actually said that, in fact, this is coming from the White House, not from the Senate. The White House threatened to veto the bill over its provisions about Iran, which will probably lead to a war with Iran, as opposed to its abuse of civil liberties. That's a disturbing piece of information, but a lot more came out of that interview. Then we spoke with Javier Corrales, an expert on Venezuela. Chavez, of course, is terminally ill. There are rumors now that he is close to death. The long and the short of it is he probably won't be around long enough to run in October. And since there's no succession in place, things are likely to get very unstable in a country that's already racked with one of the worst crime rates in the world. And then finally, I spoke about the Occupy student debt movement with one of the founders of the movement, Andrew Ross. We talked about how student debt is reaching $1 trillion this year, which is greater than consumer debt, and how the efforts on the part of the White House to reform these for-profit colleges have absolutely been destroyed by the lobbyists, all of these politically connected lobbyists. This is an absolute disgrace. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. About the places he had been to and the things that he had seen. A quiet voice singing something to me. An angel song about the home of the brave and this land here run the free. One time, one night in America. A lady dressed in white with a man she loved.